Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Cagna. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from USA Today Lions Wire, and this is the official podcast of USA Today Lions Wire. Eric, another rough one for the Lions on Sunday, losing 30-16 to the Rams. You made out on that one, though. You inch closer in our head-to-head series this season. And this Sunday, upcoming, the Lions head out to the desert to face the Arizona Cardinals. So, we want to blow through the injury stuff pretty quickly because we don't know anything for certain. We just know who's been limited and not in practice.
Yeah, they did a walkthrough today as opposed to an actual practice. So, everything on the injury report is an estimate.
All right, but one thing that's not an estimate, Jalen Reeves-Maybin is on injured reserve with a neck injury.
Yeah, you know, he's had that neck injury for, about a month now? And he has been limited and then played and then limited and then didn't play. And it's back and forth. And I guess this is just, it's not getting better. And if it's not getting better, I'm sure they don't want to risk any long-term injuries with him. And so This is a move to, I think, ensure the healing process for later as opposed to this season.
All right, so the three players who were not practicing during practice today, Kerryon Johnson, Devin Kennard, and Trevor Bates.
Yeah, Kerryon's no surprise, right? He's been out for a while. We saw Kennard leave in the second half of the Rams game, so no surprise he's still on the no. And Bates was an interesting late-week add. He was added on Saturday and then didn't play on Sunday. So his situation is worth monitoring because we really don't know how severe that ankle is with Trevor Bates.
Six guys were limited. Leading the way is Ziggy Ansah and Matthew Stafford, so it stays alive with Ansah. Also Kenny Galladay, Bruce Ellington, Brandon Powell, and Nick Ballore, all limited in practice.
The nice thing is that Powell, Ballore, and Roberts have all been upgraded in their status, right?
And Michael Roberts, I did not mention, he was a full participant in practice today.
Right. So again, Roberts going from a no game to a full is very encouraging. Ballore from no practice to limited is an upgrade. Powell, like Bates, had some fluctuation to his week last week. Getting in limited early, even if it's just an approximation, is a good sign.
All right. Morgan Cannon asks, if you're Patricia/Quinn, do you shut down Kerryon for the rest of the season? I feel like you can make a strong argument either side, but I think if there's even a chance he can further injure the knee, I'd shut him down for the rest of 2018.
Yeah, I mean, if there's a chance he's going to injure himself, then I think for sure they would shut him down. There's no reason to risk it. The big question is you know, how severe or how significant is his injury? The fact that he hasn't practiced in, going on almost 3 weeks now is a bit concerning. And so it's possible they could shut him down, especially if this week doesn't merit the result that they want. But, you know, as a rookie, I'm comfortable giving him more snaps as he needs it. Like we talked about last week with Jamal Agnew, these young guys can benefit from some extra reps. But it all depends on how, that knee checks out. If there's even a little bit of a risk, I don't think they're going to take that chance.
It's odd that, I don't know if it's odd, it was a philosophical discussion for a few weeks. Now it's trending towards just a medical discussion, like, well, is he even healthy enough to return? And,
sure.
You know, how much of that have they known all along? How much of that are they just learning? How much of that could be, we'll say he's a little more hurt than he actually is, you know?
Yeah, you know, they do that with fringe roster players sometimes, where they say they're a little bit more hurt than they are, right? Mm-hmm. But with Kerryon, I think they'd be interested in getting him some work if he was healthy. It's just a matter of they're not going to put him out there unless he is 100%.
All right, and in our ever-rotating roster, Eric Lee, who was released, 2 weeks ago?
Last week.
And
no, maybe.
No, because last week he was brought onto the practice squad. So this week, promoted from the practice squad to the 53-man.
Yeah, he takes Reeves-Maven's spot, and then they brought back their defensive, their nose tackle, John Atkins, and who was cut last week. and he comes back to the practice squads. He was released last week to make room for Eric Lee. So, again, yeah, it's this, keeping the same kind of guys around, guys that fit the system, guys that can help them prepare for the week.
Right, and finally, as of roughly 7 p.m. on December 5th, which is a Wednesday, 2018, nobody was released or waived. So,
well, yeah.
Moving on, talking about the takeaways from the Rams game. Number one, defense kept them in the game. They were the only reason why they were in the game for such the long stretch of it they were.
Yeah. You know, I think they put some pressure on the Rams, you know, vaunted offense, and they really did a good job of holding them down. I think the final score isn't really indicative of how close the game was. But
well, it's 16-13 headed into the fourth quarter.
Right. Yeah. And so there was a chance. And as we've talked about
so
before.
So you're telling me there's a chance.
As we've talked about with these guys before, though, yeah, the issue the last few weeks has been their inability to finish.
Damon Harrison, A'shaun Robinson, Deshaun Hand continue to thrive together. Worth noting that people are bandying about seeing A'shaun Robinson in the Pro Bowl when he was at a very poor beginning of the season.
It was an active week one, right?
That's not good.
Well, and, you know, my conclusion that I drew was after a rough preseason and training camp was he looked like he lost some weight, and that weight has made him a little bit more agile. He started to improve at the beginning of the season. Harrison has really been a benefit for him. He has really seen the light with Harrison taking up that nose tackle spot and allowing A'shaun to be a little bit more flexible in a more natural position for him. So he's seen a lot of success. I think him and Harrison are right up in that top five of defensive tackles right now in most grading systems. So they're doing real well together. And Hand is leading all defensive rookies in PFF scoring right now. So, you know, he's really turning into to something that can be really good down the road. So the three of them together are really proving to be something that the Lions can build off of going into the offseason.
All right, the interior offensive line was overwhelmed. It didn't really take a keen football eye to notice that Kenny Wiggins did not belong out there with Donald and Sue, and Glasgow and Ragnow didn't fare too much better.
I thought Glasgow did okay. The problem with Glasgow is that he ended up he's picking the between the lesser of two evils, right? So you've got Ragnow against Sue, or Ragnow against Donald a lot of the time, and they would flip him back and forth, but off the snap, Glasgow has to pick which one he thinks is going to need more help, and he does that based off of a pre-snap read. And a lot of the time, he'd pick the one and he'd help, but he couldn't get there to help the other. And so you can't help both of them, and that was a real hard ask for the interior. All three of them had a tough day. That the guards really had a really hard time. You know, handling both those two defensive tackles.
All right, the inability to complete games, late game mistakes again cost them. That's no shocker.
Yeah, it's turnovers late in the game when it's close. You know, you're within 3 points going into the fourth quarter, and then you fumble in your own red zone. You know,
Well, Stafford casually said he can't do that. So, you know.
Well, you know, you could tell.
Tell he's taking it seriously.
No, but you can tell he is. He was a little bit panicked, and you know what? He got knocked down 11 times. He got sacked 4 times. And when your guards are getting beat as routinely as they are, he's going to get a little bit of happy feet. And with the Donald sack fumble, he made a decision and then second-guessed himself and turned, and then second-guessed his second guess and turned again. And that you can't just spin like a top when Donald's coming at you. So he outthought himself there, and when you're not getting, you know, when the guys in front of you can't slow him down, it's a tough spot. But yeah, he made a mistake. The guys in front of him made a mistake, and it ends up to another late turnover, and then it just became a little bit of desperation. The offense gets on the field, but there seems no urgency to their approach down the field, and you know, then they try trick plays and They're doing onside kicks at the end to try and get the ball back, and it was a difficult
an onside kick. That was I don't know. We can question decision making all the time, but they had three timeouts. The defense was playing very well. They had plenty of time. There was just under 4 minutes left, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why they didn't kick it deep.
I think it was under three, but yeah.
The Rams only had to go 11 yards to be in field goal range to end the game anyways. Right. And I know everybody's probably heard all this ad nauseum over the last few days, so I don't know if we really want to keep hammering on it. But, you know, I think this is poor decision-making by the coaching staff. They could stop the clock four times.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got to bring this up. This is more for me. Sorry, everybody listening. But I've got to, like, mark down every time Matt Patricia uses the clock incorrectly. And this is just another one of those games.
Well, I've been a guy that's been with you saying that he's mismanaged games in the past. I didn't have as much of an issue with the onside kick here. I'm okay with that. They were playing aggressive, and they had to play aggressive against a team who was 11-1. They get a couple of first downs, and they can drain the clock. That was his excuse, is even no matter where they are on the field, if they get two first downs, the game's over anyways. And so that was his reasoning, and that's fine. I can see both sides of this. I'm not going to crucify him over this like I did some of the other decision makers early in the season. I was okay with the onside. Look, the onside kicked earlier to try and catch him off guard. You had trick plays to Taylor Decker.
That's fine.
I'm saying it fit with the scheme or the approach of trying to be more aggressive. And I know I'm in the minority, but for this is an instance where it didn't bother me as much.
No, that's a little surprising.
Yeah.
I wouldn't keep talking about it.
I know the majority of people are siding with you, though, on this for sure.
Well, I just feel that, like, the defense played well for most of the game. Sure, they were tiring out at that point, and they even showed off that they were as tired as can be by the end of it, because the Rams end up scoring. But, I don't know, there could have been also a psychological component to that, thinking that, hey, why is he onside kicking here? Like, we can stop him deep, and if we bend him deep, we can have better field position and give Matthew a little more time with a little less field to go. That's it. That's all. That's the only direction I was going with it.
No, I hear you, and I agree with – I can see both sides of this argument. And while I myself would have probably kicked deep, I'm not going to get – I understand if you're being – he was aggressive throughout the game, and so I understand an aggressive call there.
All right. Finally, the players are playing hard. They're not quitting on the season, which is good to see.
Yeah, you know, and in the locker room, it was more evident – than it had been in previous games. These guys were very disappointed. They seemed very frustrated with everything. I don't want to minimize their reaction in previous games, but you could tell that this was a game that they thought they could win, and they weren't able to, and they seemed very frustrated by that fact. You look at how they're performing on the field and the ways that they're, you know, the stops that they're pulling out and the effort that these guys are giving, I don't think you can question that this team has given up on this season, even though it's a very daunting task where they're at right now.
Just Daniel asks, which defensive line is better, 2014 Lions or the 2018 Lions after the acquisition of Damon Harrison? I'll tackle it first. I mean, the 2014 Lions, that defensive line was probably the best position group of the NFL's second-best defense. And the Sue Farrelly combination was a poor man's version of Sue Donald combination. Sue, back then, I don't know, I'd say he might have been better than Aaron Donald at that age. Not now. And Farrelly, well, quite a bit worse than Sue is nowadays. But they also had, year one? Of
Ziggy.
Yep, year one of Ziggy Ansah.
Yeah.
And he had 7.5 sacks.
So he had a healthier Ansah.
And yeah, he was healthy all season. And they had George Johnson at defensive end who chipped in 6.5 sacks.
Mm-hmm.
They had the longtime Eastern Michigan Eagle, Jason Jones. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That defensive line had a little more depth. And Sue, even though he's a bad dude and a lot of people, he leaves a poor taste in everybody's mouth, he was absolutely dominant that season.
Yeah. And didn't they have C.J. Mosley at defensive tackle, too?
They had C.J. Mosley, who chipped in 2.5 sacks.
Yeah, and Mosley was a good run stopper. I would say 2014 was a better collective group, even though this group is probably the best interior defensive line that they've had. The interior defensive line on this unit, the three of them, Sue and Fairley and Mosley, compared to Harrison, Ashawn, and Deshaun, I think it's
better. Sue's better than all those guys.
Sue's better than all of them, but the other two, but the Ashawn, Robinson and Hand are better than Fairley and Mosley. And so it's kind of a pick 'em, but collectively that the 2014 line was better, I believe. Yeah.
All right. I enjoyed watching that wrecking ball for that one year, even though I knew if we had this podcast back then, I would have guessed everything that he would have said in the postgame press conference and probably been pretty close. Anyhow, moving on to the Arizona Cardinals. They no longer play at University of Phoenix Stadium. It's the same building. It's called something else now. I can't remember what it's called. The betting line. Lions favored by 2.5. So if the folks listening out there don't intently follow the NFL, the Cardinals are one of the league's worst. Although, they're coming off a coach-firing win in Green Bay with a walk-off field goal. Referee Sean Hockley, the young son of longtime NFL official Ed Hockley, loves handing out penalty flags 17.91 per game, which is way above league average.
Way above it.
And it's way higher than I think anybody else we've seen this season.
Yeah, I think Hockley, when we saw him earlier, was the highest, and now he's actually gone up since then as well. So,
and that's not all his flags, it's his entire crew's flags, but
yep,
still it seems to be a lot. And now we're playing this game here, we got two bad teams, and so we might see a lot of bad penalty flags.
Sure.
Instead of just letting them play, which they probably should let them do to keep the game under 3 hours. Broadcast team, we get Tim Brando and the great Brady Quinn. Ugh. Remember from Notre Dame games? That's not a good group. It's not a good pairing.
Nope.
But when you have, what are the Cardinals, 3-9 or
correct,
2-10? It's 3-9. And we're 4-8. Well, we're going to get the lowest crew. Mm-hmm. They got to put Spielman on a better game.
Yep.
All right. Head coach, Steve Wilks. And a name that everybody knows very well, Byron Leftwich, promoted offensive coordinator.
Yeah, they fired their offensive coordinator, Mike McCoy.
Mike McCoy, who we remember from, who did he used to coach? The Chargers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
former Charger head coach.
They fired him mid-October, right? Mm-hmm. And so they went 1-6 to start, and then they fired McCoy, and then Leftwich was promoted, and then Leftwich has not really done anything with it. And so while they have gone 2-3, over that period since Leftwich has taken over, it's still, the offense has been pretty lethargic.
All right. The GM is Steve Keim. I don't know. Wilks is on the hot seat, which is kind of odd since he's in year one.
But I think
we talked about Wilks for a minute during the offseason. We were talking about our new head coaching search. He was never really on the radar for us. Or did he interview once?
They offered him to interview, and he turned it down because he believed that they were going with Patricia.
Oh, well, he nailed it.
And so he is on the hot seat because the GM is on the hot seat. So they're both on the hot seat. If the GM gets fired, Wilks could go with it because they're very disappointed in this season.
All right, so two of their three wins are at home. Still, that's not a stellar home record. They're one win at home, two wins on the road, 1-5 at home.
And two of their wins came against the 49ers. So
they beat us by the transitive property of football.
But they also beat the Green Bay Packers, who we also beat.
Well, that hurts the transitive property.
So they've beat the Packers, the Niners, twice, but then they've lost to a whole slew of teams, some of them by a little and some of them by a lot.
All right, quarterback, one of my favorites in this draft class, Josh Rosen. He's a first-round draft pick. He was like pick 10. It's in his first year here in the league. Mike Glennon in his backup after they kicked Sam Bradford to the curb.
Yeah, Bradford started the first 3 weeks, then was benched in week 3, and then released last month. Rosen took over in his, 9.5 weeks that he's been there. He's averaging 16 completions on 30 passes for about 54%, less than 200 yards passing, and he throws 1.1 touchdowns and 1.2 interceptions. So More touchdown or more interceptions than touchdowns right now. He's not developing at quite the rate that they were hoping for. And they've really just had a really difficult time getting offense generated.
Now, it's also worth noting this is one of the NFL's worst offenses. If not,
yeah,
the NFL's worst offense.
It might be. They average like 14 or 15 points a game, something like that.
But they have one bright spot on their offense, and that's running back David Johnson.
Now, Johnson actually hasn't been used a whole lot, or used properly, I guess, and that's been part of the reason that they've struggled so much. Excuse me. He averages 63 yards on the ground and then 27 in the air. He's only had one 100-yard rush game this year. He was pretty much a regular 100-yard rusher in previous offenses, and for whatever reason, they've stopped utilizing him as much in the pass game. He's only caught four passes in the last 3 weeks, so they've really settled down on how they're using him. Now, they have a fourth-rounder, Chase Edmonds, and they have utilized him about 20% of the time. He hasn't had a whole lot of action this whole year, but against Green Bay, he took five rushes and turned it into 53 yards and two touchdowns. So he had a nice game against Green Bay, but he's been pretty quiet overall. Their third back is TJ Longan. He doesn't do really anything.
Now, another name that's familiar to all of us football fans, although he's on the downside of his career, Larry Fitzgerald at wide receiver. He's got running mates, Chad Williams, who we may not see.
Hasn't played since week 9.
Trent Sherfield, J.J. Nelson, who when in Cincinnati was like at the end. He was always available in the fantasy football waiver wire. So, and then you know, pick him up and then you drop him next week. And then Christian Kirk's an up-and-comer, but he's on IR.
Yeah, he broke his foot last game. He and Fitzgerald were the starters, and Kirk was arguably their best and most productive offensive player. For sure, their most productive wide receiver. But he broke his foot. Now he's on IR. And now they're going to be turning to Larry Fitzgerald and these couple other guys who are really... It looks eerily like the Lions, where they have one big receiver and then a whole bunch of guys who just kind of fill in.
All right, the tight ends, Ricky Seals-Jones and Jermaine Gresham.
Gresham's a blocker. Seals-Jones is a converted wide receiver. They don't really utilize either of them a whole lot. Seals-Jones, despite being a former receiver in the past four games, has one catch, one catch, one catch, and then five catches. He's only had one touchdown on the year. Gresham, he has two catches over the last month, so he doesn't really do a whole lot. So tight ends are not utilized as much in the passing game. Gresham can be a good blocker, though.
All right, the offensive line from left to right, Corey Cunningham, Will Holden.
Now, I'm going to pause you there.
Right.
We think that's who they're going with because they just...
lost Mike Iupati.
And Humphreys today.
Those are both well-known offensive linemen, DJ Humphreys mostly from his time in San Diego and Iupati from his time in Baltimore.
I think you're getting Humphreys confused
embarrassing.
I believe Humphreys they drafted.
Then who am I confusing?
It's another DJ.
All right, keep talking.
But we believe it's going to be Corey Cunningham. We believe it's going to be Will Holden because Humphreys went on IR today. Iupati went on IR yesterday. Their center is Mason Cole, who they drafted in the third round, former Michigan Wolverine.
Oh, I wanted to mention that.
Oh, I apologize. He is in there because their center, A.Q. Shipley, is on IR. Ode Abouche is their right guard. He's on there because their right guard is on IR. And Zach Goldich, their right tackle, is in there because their right tackle, Justin Pugh, is on IR. So the entire offensive line is that they started the year with is on IR, all five of them. So they've got a whole slew.
Sea Lions fans, it could be worse.
They got a whole slew of backups. Now, that should speak well to how we match up on the interior against them. And it also speaks to why Rosen has had a hard time generating offense.
I don't know who I was thinking of. This is really bothering me now. All right. We'll figure this out later. I get the idiot award of the day. So losing all five offensive linemen, all of them being in on it.
You're thinking IR. DJ Fluker.
Am I thinking maybe that's where the DJ's coming from?
DJ Fluker played
DJ Humphreys.
Yeah, in San Diego.
All right. this offense is so poor. As you mentioned already, that Rosen is averaging only 180-some passing yards per game. They're only running for 86. So that's good for under 240 total yards per game. Whereas, you know, we sit back and watch the team get 300. So we're outgaining them on average by 100 yards per game. That's how poor their offense is. Think about how frustrated we've been.
Right.
All right, Brandon Kerr. The Lions tried to take away the two best players that the Rams had. What will the Lions do against the Cardinals in the same vein?
They're going to go after David Johnson. That's the goal. Go after David Johnson, put the ball in the rookie's hands.
Force Josh Rosen to beat you.
Yeah.
Although this backfired on him once this season already with Sam Darnold when it comes to rookie quarterbacks.
The tricky part about Fitzgerald is that if you say, hey, we'll just put Slay on Fitzgerald. Well, Fitzgerald goes in the slot a lot. And Slay doesn't operate out of the slot too well. So you might be able to just put Slay on him and see what happens and then let everyone else poke bracket. But I think they might play this one more straight up and see how it goes. I don't know if they want to keep putting Slay in the slot. We saw what happened when he faced against Davante Adams in Green Bay. That was the only time this year he traveled in the slot routinely, and that was a problem day for him.
All right, moving to the defensive side of the ball, where the Cardinals fare quite a bit better.
Yep.
They're more at the middle of the pack around where we are. They run a 4-2-5 defense, and then down on the defensive line, we got Chandler Jones and Marcus Golden on the outside.
Yeah, and Chandler Jones is basically their version of Ziggy Ansah, right? They'll stand him up, though, whereas Ansah's more of a down. Jones will come from a more standing position. Former New England Patriot played in New England the same role that Ziggy plays here in Detroit.
All right, on the inside, Corey Peters, Rodney Gunter, one of my favorites back in his college days, Robert Nkemdiche, and Olsen Pierre.
Nkemdiche is a situational guy. Sometimes they'll use him only like 40% of the time. Sometimes they'll use him like 80% of the time. So it just depends on what their game plan is. My guess is he may get a little bit of extra looks because he's more athletic, and that could be, as we saw last week, the athletes usually do pretty well against Detroit on the interior, especially if they can get him one-on-one with Wiggins. But Chandler Jones is really the guy you need to be worried about up front here.
All right, the linebacking core, Gerald Hodges, Hassan Reddick, and Deion Buchanan. Hassan Reddick, a lot of people wanted to see him be a Lion.
Yeah, for sure, and he's really a talented guy, and he's going to be their best linebacker. Hodges is taking over this game because former Lion Josh Bynes went on IR. Bynes was having a terrific year, almost like Pro Bowl-level year type of year for Arizona, and he just went down recently, last week. And so now Hodges is the guy taking over for them, so this is another situation where they've lost their starter and they're relying on a backup. Now, Buchanan is really the interesting one here because this was a guy who was playing at a Pro Bowl level for years. Now that they switched their defense, he doesn't fit. He's been the odd man out. He's now been demoted to situational roles. He didn't play last week because of a chest injury, but before that, when he did play, it was 27% of the time, 17% of the time, 60% of the time, and then 12% of the time in the previous month. So Buchanan is really not the player that we're used to seeing, and he's not someone that they really rely on to be productive from a defensive standpoint.
All right, defensive backs, cornerback Patrick Peterson. Bring him up because everybody wanted to see the Lions trade for him.
Sure.
When the trade deadline was coming and going. The other starter, Ben Workery, is placed on IR.
Yep, so they got another spot here where they've lost a starter in recent weeks, and they've relied on some other guys to try and fill in. They tried when Ben Berwicki went down 2 weeks ago. They tried Leonard Johnson there. He's been their number three. He didn't work. He struggled. So then they switched to David Amerson, who was their fourth corner, now their starter. And he had more success last week. But again, it's a weak spot. But if they put Patrick Peterson on Kenny Golladay, you're getting a better matchup maybe for Bruce Ellington in this one. But again, you just don't have the weapons beyond Golladay.
Yeah, really take advantage of this.
Correct.
Right. The safeties, Antoine Bethea, Buda Baker, Trey Boston. Not a bad group.
Yeah, they use all three, right? And Buda is their strong safety, but they use him in the nickel spot. Boston's their free, but he kind of operates more like a strong. Bethea's a really good free safety there. And they'll utilize a lot of what Detroit... They'll operate a lot of ways Detroit did at the beginning of the season as opposed to what they've been doing lately.
All right, moving on to the special teams. Zane Gonzalez is the kicker, replacing Phil Dawson, who went on IR.
IR for them, where they've lost like half their team to IR this year. It's crazy.
Now, you talk about Steve Wilks being on the hot seat. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. What if he gets fired? They bring in Mike McCarthy. And now Zane Gonzalez, who ended his Green Bay career as his kicker. Do you think he just releases him right away? I know, I don't know who the GM's going to be. It would have to be a GM that would line up to McCarthy, because apparently that's what we need nowadays. We can't have people who didn't know each other working together anymore.
Well, Zane hit the 44-yard field goal to win it, and Crosby missed it. The chance to tie, right, as you mentioned. So maybe he doesn't. Maybe Gonzalez is a better, more reliable kicker than Crosby in his eyes. But yeah, I don't know.
Punter's Andy Lee. Kick returner was Christian Kirk, so we're going to also see TJ Logan or Brandon Williams returning kicks.
Yep.
All right, Hail Mary asks, assuming Kerryon Johnson will not play on Sunday, do you see Zach Zenner playing a bigger role in the running game? Do you think he could work the same magic he did in the Dallas Monday Night Football game back in 2016?
No.
I think how, you know, that's something how people remember that our running game was that bad for that long that they remember this game where Zach Zenner rushed for what, 83 yards? It wasn't a 100-yard game.
Well, he did it like most of it in the first half. He was out gaining Zeke, right?
Yep.
But here's the thing: Zenner was in that game because they didn't have anybody else. They literally had no other running backs, and so now you've got two other running backs ahead of them that they've utilized the last 2 weeks, and Blunt has found more success. I don't see Zenner being put into a situation where he's going to do a whole lot.
Zenner only played 3 offensive plays and had 1 rush for 7 yards.
And he had another rush that he got horse-collared by Sue, so that got the offense another 5. But he's situational, and he's more valuable on special teams.
Call that situational?
Yeah.
Or do you just mean situational by he plays special teams?
Ralph. Special teams is his priority. That's where he does most of his success, or gets most of his success. But he's a guy that's going to come in when they want a bigger back and they think Blunt might be a bit tired, and that's really about his only role right now.
All right, we got to pick the game. You won last week, so you get the honor.
23-17. Lions.
Oh, wow. Do I let you draw within one game of me? So I got to think the Lions. Well, yeah, you know what? The Lions are going to win because they're going to screw around with the draft position. So let's go with Lions. So you did 23-17. So let's go with 26-21.
Okay.
All right. We'll see how this all turns out.
I'm going to get another game closer, it sounds like.
We'll see. All right, now we're going to move on to the podcast questions, starting with Alex Stahl. If the 2018 Detroit Lions were a Christmas gift, what would they be?
You want to think about this one for a second?
All right. Yeah, do you have an answer already?
I would think that if they were a Christmas gift, they would probably be a something of the month club, right? Like a jelly of the month club.
Jelly of the month
club. Or a beer of the month club.
Fruitcake of the month club.
Or whatever it is. Because it's as unpredictable as those are, right? You never know if you're going to get the ones that you like or if you're going to get the ones that you don't. So that would be my...
I would claim a third. They really only give you what you want a third of the time, not a half.
Well, so, you know what? If you are a particular... If you have a particular taste for a particular fruitcake or something or a particular jelly, you might only like a third of them.
I guess I would... You know, like you talk about inconsistency, I would think they would be a present that would like not live up to your expectations. You know, something that you really wanted, but then when you got it, you know, it fell like short. You know, say you got that NES Classic, right? But you only really played Mario 3 anyway, so you have these 30 games and you really don't want to play any of them except for Mario 3. So it's like, why did you just spend $70 on Mario 3? Although it's a Christmas gift, so it would be given to you. But falls short of your expectations. They had the cords too short to play the game and all that. All right.
I thought you were going to say something along the lines of, it allows you to play a video game, but then it shuts itself off before you can complete it.
No, well, like, no, that would be untrue. I don't want to speak ill of the good people at Nintendo who work their tails off to put out this product.
Okay.
Although I did speak ill of them because the game selection wasn't the greatest. Because it has Tecmo Bowl on it, Eric. It's not Tecmo Super Bowl. It's Tecmo Bowl. That's much worse. 9 players on the field. Come on. All right. Daniel Reese, do you think we will start seeing some of the younger guys on the bottom of the roster getting some more playing time?
I don't.
Who's their left young guy besides Tease Tabor? Who else is a young guy that doesn't play? They all play.
Well, Ragnow, Johnson, Hand, Ford already play. Walker is getting 20%. I think his snaps will go up a little bit. I don't know if they can find a way to work in Crosby. I'd love to see him get some snaps at guard. Powell's got to get healthy before he can get in, but if he might be able to get in and get some snaps. Of the second-year players, like you said, Tease is the only one that needs more. Everybody else is pretty much getting a full complement. So,
no.
Yeah, so it was just a couple of guys that I think could get some more.
Blake Berry, when did Patricia start calling plays? Did I miss something?
Now, I didn't see this, but I heard about this. I heard he had a call sheet that they showed on the television, and he was making calls. Now,
it's his team. He can do what he wants.
Now, I know he oversees everything.
He's the head coach.
And we've seen different variations of him overseeing things. Like some games it'll be him overseeing the defensive play calls. And then when the offense is on the field, he's over talking to the defense, making adjustments. I heard he had the play sheet and he was actually, it looked like he was physically making the calls. I didn't see it because I didn't watch the television feed. But if he did make those calls, that would be a new wrinkle for me. I thought he just oversaw them. So I will dig into that a little bit more. But if he is actually calling it, then it's a new wrinkle.
All right, Ryan in Lines 99 asks similar questions. When it comes to the ultra conservative and overly predictable moves on offense, what percent of the blame falls on personnel? Then Jim Bob Cooter, then Matt Patricia, in that order.
Well,
I'm going 33.3%, 33.3%, 33.3%.
Yeah, you know, you might fluctuate it a little bit, maybe 30, 40, 30 for me. I mean, like if I'm
Cooter's gone. That's why I have him as a lower number. He's gone. They're going to fire him. So it's really not his fault anymore.
Yeah.
You would think he'd get... Well, actually, no. I guess maybe we put a spin on it this way. You think he'd get a lot more aggressive and not care what Patricia thinks about that? Because, well, I'm fired anyways. I got to show off for another team that I can call some plays.
Well, you know, he actually called a couple of trick plays. Like, he called the double pass. He called the Taylor Decker touchdown. The
wonderful. Tackle-eligible.
He set up that the Taylor Decker setup was a really nice setup, right? Because they had been working in other offensive linemen, and every time they come in, they have to say that they're eligible. And then when Crosby comes in, he goes to the ref, and instead of saying his number is eligible, he says Decker's number is eligible. So the defense, if they're not paying attention, don't realize that it's Decker that's eligible. They set up normally. So they go. Technically, it's a overloaded right side, and then Decker is allowed to sneak. It's a nice design, good execution. But so I think he's getting more creative. But two or three creative plays doesn't make
not
up.
Not going to save
your
job.
Yeah, because you're still calling 50 plays that are pretty terrible. So
although he did mix Joe Dahl in there at fullback,
and he was successful.
I just like when more fat guys get out there and get to do some things.
I do think all three are accountable, though. And I think, ultimately, Patricia is overseeing that, and Patricia is making the game plan in the week. So he has to be held accountable, as well as Jim Cooter actually calling the physical plays.
All right, Saweta Patel. Will we see more play action from Stafford in the remaining games? Stafford, all right, go ahead. Yeah, probably. It's just what they do. That's a big chunk of their offense.
Well, and they actually haven't done it, I mean, a whole lot to my satisfaction, because Stafford is actually a very good play-action guy. Right now, I think he's the fifth most successful play-action passer in the league. Last year he was first, but they don't rely on it as much as I think they could in order to be successful. So will they do it more? I would hope to see it more because they're successful at it.
Kyle Klein, if the offense is another pitiful showing this week or in Buffalo, is Jim Bob Cooter gone before the end of the season? I'm only going to say no because the weather might be terrible in Buffalo. Well, there's other reasons for it, but like they could have a terrible offensive showing in Buffalo because there might be like 8.5 inches of snow on the ground. Anyhow, that was a weird aside. Getting a head start on the offensive coordinator candidates might be the most important part of this offseason. One more loss would all but eliminate any real chance for the playoffs. What?
Okay.
They're out. They've been eliminated from the playoffs. I know we're mathematically still alive. I love math. But I know they're out. They're not making the playoffs.
Right.
Let's forget. Like, I shouldn't read these parts of the questions. Although, Kyle, thank you for the question.
I don't think that he will get cut before the end of the season. Because...
No, why? What's the point?
Well, that's the thing is, and we're going to get that's,
unless they want to see if Godsey can call plays. The only reason why they'd fire him is if they think his replacement's in house. And I'm sorry, I keep cutting you off here.
No, but that's where I'm going with this, right? And you're hitting it on the head for me here. You can't really get a head start on offensive. I mean, look, if you're going to get a head start on offensive coordinator candidates, you can do that while Cooter's employed, and. The only way you're going to get a head start is actually if it's an in-house guy that you're trying to promote. Like, if you think Godsey is the future, then yeah, fire Jim Bob and see what Godsey's got. But I think if we remember what he did when he was with the Texans, I don't think Godsey's the answer.
Greg Warren, is there any good reason to still have Jim Bob Cooter on the staff at this point? We've seen other teams' offenses get a spark using the same playbook, just with different play caller. The longer he's on staff, the more worried I get that he'll still be here next season. All right, that's a valid concern, but yeah, and you are right. Like, if you get a new play caller, sometimes that hits the reset button and refreshes some teams, but what does it matter now?
Well, look no further than our opponent this week. They fired their offensive coordinator midseason for Leftwich, and it hasn't done anything.
Yeah, you pointed out all their guys are on IR.
Well, that too, right? But you know what? Our roster's heading that way, it seems like.
We still have four offensive linemen that we had at the beginning of the year. That's better than zero.
That is true.
And we are hurting in the skill positions, but you'd think you'd get something out of somebody.
But back to his original question, I think you keep him because you're trying to evaluate your players. And when you're keeping a consistent playbook and you're allowing them to run in an offense that they've been running all season, you can get an idea of who can do what. If you are switching things up for them and asking them to relearn a playbook with a month left in the season when they're eliminated from the playoffs, the players are not going to buy into that. It's more detrimental to fire him at this point.
All right, Josh Nelson and BOJC Thrilla ask similar questions. It's quite obvious that the One Pride fan base is frustrated with Jim Bob Cooter. Is he really the problem, and who are some logical candidates to replace him at offensive coordinator if he were to be relieved of his duties?
So we got a similar question to this last week. I brought up Shane Waldron as the guy I preferred, but I'm going to refer us to The Athletic, and Chris Burke wrote an article for The Athletic a couple weeks ago. He listed a whole slew of candidates. I can't go through all of them from a time standpoint here, but he mentioned Godsey or even Jeff Davison as in-house potentials. I don't think either of them are realistic, or like we just talked about, they might would have already made that move. Shane Waldron is, of course, my guy. If you also want to stick with the Rams, they have a quarterback coach named Zach Taylor who was on Chris Burke's list. You could go to New England and look at their receivers coach, Chad O'Shea, their tight end coach, Nick Callie, or even their assistant quarterback coach, Jerry Schublinski. He is the assistant quarterback coach because Josh McDaniels has an ego, and he is the offensive coordinator and the quarterback coach because he's Josh McDaniels.
You just double the pay.
Right. Sure. He mentioned Cliff Kingsbury, who was fired from Texas Tech. Cliff has already signed with USC, but...
It's a nice move by them.
But I think the NFL, if they really want, it could maybe pry him away. The other name that I really think people need to watch is if Miami fires Adam Gase. He's from Michigan, grew up in Ypsilanti. He was in
Spartans graduate assistant.
And he was in Denver when Jim Bob Cooter was there. So the offense isn't too far off from what they already have. So it wouldn't be a huge adjustment for guys like Stafford and the other skill players. So, and he's a proven offensive coordinator as well. He can be very creative. And I don't think that would shake things up too much. But he is more creative than Jim Bob Cooter is. So then there's a handful of quarterbacks coaches from Texans, Chiefs, Raiders, Cowboys.
Kellen Moore is staring at becoming an NFL offensive coordinator that young.
I hope not. But
hey, what if he knows his football?
There's a handful of other guys in this article as well. But the big names for me, Shane Waldron's the guy that I think is going to draw the most attention. But if Gase gets let go, I really think Gase makes a lot of sense if you want to keep some continuity.
Dave Griffiths asks, what coaching staff changes do you see happening in the offseason other than the obvious one with Jim Bob?
We asked a question. We got this question like almost exactly last week, and the big thing that we said was defensive coordinator and maybe a tight end coach could be on the chopping block as well.
All right, Brian Ballard. Okay, what worries me is that this will be more than 1 year to get back to serious competing. Can you see a way the issues and problems can be solved in just one offseason?
You know what?
A tiny little package. It happened. Brian Ballard, it happens. It happens for a lot of teams.
It does. It
happened for the Rams, who we just lost last week. Bless you.
Excuse me.
The Chiefs and the Saints have been good for a little while, but I don't know. The teams can make a big turnaround in the NFL in one season. It's very possible.
Yeah.
But maybe not these Lions.
You change a couple coaches, and you add a couple more skill players, and you add some more players that fit the system, and away you go.
Rapid fire. Brad Rollins, who do the Lions got to increase cap space this year?
I hate picking out players that could get cut, but salaries that are a little bit larger than what they do are Lang and Quinn could be guys that retire. Riddick, we've talked about even this season. Sam Martin isn't producing at a punter level that he used to. People are high on cutting Wagner because Crosby isn't sitting there in the wings. It's a big cap hit to get rid of Wagner for me, though, so I'm not so sure on that.
Richard asks, what are their three biggest needs to fill this offseason? Do they get a Jared Cook in free agency or draft another tight end in the mid rounds?
I think their top three targets are going to be edge rusher, linebacker, cornerback, and we'll see, or defensive back, and we'll see what happens from there.
BOJC Thrilla, will the Lions address the offensive line and defensive line more in free agency or the draft?
I think the offensive line would be more of a free agency type of thing, and the draft and the DL would be more of a draft thing because you're looking to add youth on the defensive line, whereas the offensive line, you probably need a veteran to plug into that right guard if Lang doesn't return.
Daniel Reese asks, looking ahead, who is a defensive prospect that would be ideal for Patricia's system? Nick Bosa not included, as he will most likely be off the board. Yeah, like most likely, yes.
The guys at the top are really all good fits. Quinnen Williams from Alabama, Josh Allen, the edge rusher from Kentucky.
Not that Josh Allen. Kentucky's
yeah.
Josh.
Kentucky's Josh Allen is basically like a better version of Devin Kennard. That would be a fun mix to have those two on opposite sides. But if they want in a linebacker, Mack Wilson from Alabama is another really good fit. I keep an eye on all three of those guys.
Logan Lamarindier asks, would Jared Davis be better as an outside linebacker? Maybe similar to what Kyle Van Noy does in New England, playing the edge and occasionally as an off-ball backer. Do you think Quinn Patricia would entertain the idea in the offseason and be open to adding another middle linebacker?
I think they would be open to it, but it would take the right guy, and it would need to be one of the higher-end guys in order to do it. You go out and you get C.J. Mosley from Baltimore. Yeah, you can shift Jared to Will. Now, I talked to Logan about this, and I kind of think KVM plays more of a jack role. But to his point, the other linebacker spots do a little bit more of blitzing than the Mike does, and that's something Davis has been really good at. So you could shift Davis to the Will. It would still have a lot of the same responsibilities he has as the Mike. But if you are upgrading with a guy like C.J. Mosley, yeah, that'd be a very natural move to shift Davis over. Now, if you get a guy like Anthony Barr or Dont'a Hightower, who are bigger names, I don't think they're good enough to supplant Davis and shift him out because of the types of roles that they had. But if you draft a Mack Wilson, that's very possible. You know what I mean? If you draft Devin Bush out of Michigan, Tevin Conley, T.J. Edwards out of Wisconsin, possible, but it's also possible they could line them up at the will as well.
Five-time WCW champ asks, I noticed there's been a height threshold for linebackers at 6'2" since Patricia has taken over. Patriots seem to have the same threshold as well. Do you think this is intentional, and will it result in players being taken off their draft board if they do not meet the requirements?
I don't think they'll take anybody off the draft board. The three linebackers that they've added this year, Kennard, Harold, and Christian Jones, they're all 6'3". But guys like Jared Davis is under 6'2", and all the other off-the-ball linebackers are all like in that 6'1" or just over 6' height. They're not very – Christian Jones is the tallest of the off-the-ball guys. So I don't think it's a remove them from your board type of situation.
Arthur, for the first time in a long time, I'm open to corner in the first for the simple fact that an elite-level athlete at the position might be available when we pick. Those guys have shown, especially of late, they don't have as sharp of a learning curve. Only way I have this theory with the cornerback is that if you're taking an elite athlete and top-end talent, most likely high in the first round.
So your top three guys right now, in cornerbacks, Greedy Williams from LSU, DeAndre Baker from Georgia, and Byron Murphy from Washington. Murphy's a real physical guy. He'd be interesting. People have really been connecting Greedy Williams to the Lions recently. So it's possible that they go corner in the first round. If they don't and they go into the free agency and look for a corner like they did last season, don't be surprised if they do go after some of the big guys. Number one on the list for me would be Kareem Jackson.
All right, Lions 99 has a several-part question.
We're just going to get the first two, I think.
All right.
With the same.
A'shaun Robinson playing better in the acquisition of Snacks and good rookie year by Hand, does it take the nose tackle and 3-5 technique positions off the early draft table?
It would, except for a couple of elite talent guys where you could bring them in and put them in that down defensive end role and then just play with like three really good run stuffers and hope that you can generate pass rush from a different area. If you get an opportunity to take a guy like Quinnen Williams, I think you take him. I don't think you can pass because the talent is just too good there.
All right, factoring in that Stafford has been in the top 15 quarterback rating four of his healthy full eight seasons, where do you guys generally rank him out of the starting 32 NFL quarterbacks?
The way we typically, talked about this in the past, and the way I look at it is, are you in the top half of the league or are you in the bottom half of the league? And for me, he's in the top half of the league.
Yeah, I guess I'd sit in the same region, except listen to what the stat that was thrown to us in the question. Okay, top 15 in quarterback rating, four of his healthy eight full seasons. So that means the other four, he's in the bottom half.
Yeah, but here's
NFL
the thing.
Quarterbacks.
Okay, but here's the thing. It's not the same 15 guys that are ahead of him every time.
Well,
you know
sure.
what I mean? So like, there's always going to be this fluctuation. Like, I don't have the numbers in front of me here, but you're not going to always be in the top half, even if you're a top half guy. From a statistical standpoint, it just doesn't work like that.
Well, yeah, I guess I'd have him the top half. I don't know. I'm gonna have to look at the list and really think about this one. I don't know. He probably doesn't rank up high. If you just take this year alone, well, he's not going to sit at the top of the board, you know, this year. But yeah. I don't know. He'd probably be in the top half.
There's probably
right close to the half.
There's probably three guys that are consistently in the top 15, and that's about it. And I don't think anybody else is going to be consistently in the top 15. That's just not. Guys have fluke years where they play out of their mind and then they drop off the board. You know what I mean? Like, it happens all the time. And Alex Smith, Joe Flacco. I mean, you can go down the list on all these guys that have had one really great year. But then the rest of the years have been garbage.
All right, we have not run out of questions, but we have run out of time, and we have a couple of shout outs.
Yeah, we got two more ratings, one more review. The review is from Chef Chris, who is a Detroit native but lives in Florida now. Gave us a nice review this week. Then we got some couple nice things out on Twitter from last week, after last week's pod, Justin Gunn, Larry Biscuit said some nice things to us on Twitter about how they appreciated us taking their questions and saying that they look forward to our podcast, and we appreciate those things.
Yeah, we appreciate them, and we appreciate everybody else for just listening, and we hope that you tune in again next week, hopefully coming off of a big, I don't even know why I'm hoping if it's a big Lions win. Let's keep that draft status high. I don't know, I could go either way. I'm always very torn at this time of the year.
Draft, look, it doesn't matter you're drafting.
No, we know
it's
that.
Who you draft, right? And so
the Lions have proved that time and again.
I'd rather see them win and gain some momentum and gain some experience and get some atmosphere going and then worry about your draft status after the season.
All right, so we will see you next week, or you'll hear from us next week. And until that time, let's go Lions.